Okay, order.
Right. Please just continue.
Yeah, just following on from where we were, as
just,
I said.
Just name the picture again where we are at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. As I was about to say, 3801 simply relates the geometry of photons at the top left-hand corner, where we have boson waveforms as transverse, or we measure them as photons, HF, longitudinally. Whether we're measuring charge relationships or voltage energy relationships, we then map out the electric and the magnetic field components with respect to each other, and we can measure these field geometries in the lab as oscillating electric and magnetic field components. And those oscillating electric and magnetic field components produce sine waves that are 90 degrees out of phase with each other. This relationship mathematically is best described in fact is best represented full stop by Euler's equation, e to the I pi plus 1 equals 0, where we're simply describing the geometry, the exponential geometry, E, of charged fields, pi, 2 pi for photons, which have positive and negative components, where we add the negative E to the I field to a positive E to the I field, we have a neutral field, so it sums up to 0. And this is what Euler's equation is describing. Unknown until now, until we had this geometry. Now that we have this geometry, we can see the mathematical relationship that Euler expressed represented geometrically. And if you rearrange Euler's equation to include sine and cosine, you generate the electric sine for electric fields, cosine for magnetic fields, 90 degrees out of phase with each other in time. So Euler's equation is simply a mathematical representation of electromagnetic fields. In 3804, we again reiterate the fact that with these fields, these electromagnetic fields, you will get differing answers and differing results depending on whether you measure the longitudinal photon component, the energy momenta, or the transverse charge components, the bosons. And this measurement is entirely up to the laboratory setup, and at present there are many conflicting results because the differentiation between bosons and photons, charge energy momenta or charge voltage, is not being recognized in the experimental setups. So results that apply to charged bosons are being interpreted as being photons, and no more so than in the mathematical side, where some prominent experiments have actually used the formula H mu equals the energy of the field equals HF, which is akin to saying odds equals evens, bosons equal photons, or 1 equals 2. However you want to express it, mathematically it's wrong. Geometrically it's wrong. We now have the geometry, so we can now correct it. And the best representation of a electromagnetic field is described with the unified field equation of tetrionics, as shown in the middle of the illustration, which is n pi, representing mass energy, n number. So if you have a odd number in your result, you know you're measuring bosons, charges, transversely. If you end up with an even number in your result, you know that you're measuring electromagnetic fields and photons within the field. Both bosons and photons are mass energies. They're masses that have an energy equivalence, energy momenta. They are planar, equilateral fields, flat Euclidean geometries, if you like. And that flat Euclidean geometry is what makes them immaterial, but at the same time capable of exerting real forces over a distance. And that's the immaterial part of our physics. The bosons and photons are charge and force carriers, respectively, electromagnetic force carriers, and they affect all the interactions and all the forces between particles in physics. So everything that gives us motion in physics is a result of bosons and photons, equilateral or diamond-shaped mass energy geometries. And that's the important point. They're not matter because they have no Z component. They're not 3D. They are flat, planar geometries. If they were 3D, they'd have a topology as opposed to a geometry, and we would refer to them as matter. They're not, so they are immaterial mass energies. Immaterial is probably the best description, because it points out that they are not matter. They're intangible, but they exert real forces over a distance between objects. And again, hang on a sec. I'll have to take that in a minute. Again, the illustration of 3805 gives us the geometries of bosons compared to the geometries of photons within the wave probability of EM waves. So we can see the photons, we can see the bosons, we can see the energy momenta distributions, frequency versus nu, within EM waves, and the geometry of EM waves that's created by the constituent bosons and photons. And we see highlighted quite evidently that there are two bosons for every photon in an electromagnetic field. This transverse versus longitudinal measurement of electromagnetic fields and the wave function that describes them is again shown geometrically in 3808. And again, they're identical fields of electromagnetic energy, EM waves, but whether they're made up of bosons or photons is entirely dependent on what direction you are measuring the field, whether it's transversely or longitudinal, with respect to the group phase velocity, the direction of propagation of the field. And again, there's also the ability to rotate that field 90 degrees with respect to the group phase velocity to give us transverse and longitudinal waveforms, Tesla versus Hertzian waves. The wave function themselves, or the distribution of photons or bosons within the field, is what 3809 highlights. And you can see that Tetragonics can then color code the distribution of transverse bosons to longitudinal photons, and you get different distribution patterns. Just excuse me, Otto, I'll have to take this.
Just mute sound in the recording.
Yeah.
Well, while we are listening to this, I can only say that this is fantastic again, how it all comes together with the complementarity of the photons and the bosons, the transverse and longitudinal, Hertz and Tesla, which compares to what we knew about the mass and the matter. So we just keep on unfolding the connectedness of the parts in the whole. Yeah, please go on.
Yeah, you can see that the boson distribution, or the energy levels, the charge distribution of an EM wave at the top right hand corner is different to the photon distribution, or the probabilities of finding a photon in the EM wave at the bottom right hand corner. And that if you carefully do it in tetrionics and look carefully at the color coding scheme, we can actually superposition this information to create the wave function as shown in the center of the picture. If you look closely at that, you can see that not only can you see the individual photons in the background and their position, how they make up the EM wave, but you can see the probability distribution, the longitudinal photon distribution, as shown at the bottom right hand corner, color coded within that central picture. And you can see the transverse color coding of energy levels as well in that one diagram. So that diagram there gives us quantum levels, or boson or quanta arrangements. It gives us the photon distribution, the probability of the wave function. It gives us the linear momentum, which of course also relates to the vector velocity that can be exerted by the wave function. And we can measure all this in the case of a wave form or wave function that's orthogonal to the direction of propagation as a transverse wave, as frequency of photons per second, cycles per second if you like, hertz, or if it's collinear with the direction of propagation, we would measure it as a voltage field, or the energy per charge, positive and negative, making up a neutral field. And that voltage is able to exert an electromotive force on charged particles, either that interact with the field, or that the field interacts with, or that are present in the field when it's created. If the field's created, it will obviously exert a force and accelerate or oscillate particles within that field according to the orientation of the field. 90 degrees in the case of with respect to each other in the case of transverse and longitudinal waveforms. We can then look at the classical picture of an EM wave function as it's drawn these days in 3810, and you can see that right above the wave function symbol. You can see the normal picture that classically is represented by peaks and troughs, and instead of peaks and troughs we have geometric plus and minus charges within the electromagnetic field. And the plus and minus charges, a plus charge could be a boson of a charge boson, the minus being a minus boson, or we can combine the two and express it as a photon. And that's what you see on the left and the right. You see the charged voltage fields measured with via bosons, or you see the photon distribution within the same field. These are identical EM fields, but the results obtained are the result of how we're measuring the energy quanta content of those fields, or how we're measuring the wave function. And again, applying all this information and what we've learnt before about bosons and photons, we know that chem fields contain energy of motion, as illustrated in the bottom two pictures, and we can measure that energy of the chem fields, or indeed the energy content, the mass energy content of particle topologies, either as a boson field or as a photon field, and we will get differing results for identical particles. In this case, the left-hand side illustration maps the quantum energy levels, the bosons, of both the particle and the chem field of a photoelectron or an electron in motion, and the right-hand side maps the photon distribution of the same particle. The charge is identical in both cases. The relativistic energies and the kinetic energies are identical, but in one case, the left-hand side, we're measuring Planck nu, E equals h nu, and on the right-hand side, we're measuring E equals hf, and the difference will be two bosons to every photon that's measured. And again, in all cases, every single one of these equilateral charge fields, the boson fields, the distributions and the probabilities will renormalize to one. And that's utilized as a trick in QED, when in fact it's an inherent property of equilateral energy distribution. So getting towards the pointy end of it, we can now show in 3903 that what Thomas Young described as waves of electromagnetic energy or waves of light are in fact equilateral geometries of mass, energy, momenta. And again, we're specifying mass energy because they're planar. If we're talking about bosons, we're talking equilateral fields, and we're talking about charged fields. Whereas if we're talking photons, which we normally do for light waves, we're talking 2π geometries, which are diamond-shaped fields, and we'll discuss them in a later discussion, because we're getting a bit too in-depth at this stage, I think. Well, we can touch on it. The distribution of the photon or boson geometries, that is, how best to explain it. Going back to the probabilities that we discussed in the previous pictures, particularly two back, where we could map the probabilities of finding a photon within the field, the highest probability is where the linear momentum is, the greatest field area of force, the square root bisector of the diamond is where the most number of photons is, and that's where the greatest force is, down to a single photon at the top and bottom of that field that's drawn. So it's the lowest probability, and I've shaded it down as a lower probability. In this case, we can map those probability distributions. Instead of drawing circles for light waves like Young did, we can use those distributions to describe electromagnetic fields and the intensity of the fields to explain interference patterns that are created. And that's what we do in 3908. In this case, I've simplified it by looking at the bosons, but remembering that photons are two bosons back-to-back, propagating in opposite directions. So if we look at just one half of the field moving towards a photodetector or a piece of photographic film, the highest intensity of photons hitting that film will be the center, in the bisector where the linear momentum is drawn, the square root of the field. In this case, we'll have 8 bosons impacting the field, and then as you move towards the top or the bottom away from that bisector linear momentum, the number of photons will decrease, the number of bosons, sorry, in the equilateral field will decrease until we end up with a single boson, then nothing. So if you look at that as a distribution, which you can see there numbered just before the black section showing the intensity, you can see it forms a normal distribution as we know, of equilateral energy momenta, ranging from 1 through to the square root 8 back down to 1. It's a normal distribution of energy momenta, which is what we expect, a bell curve. And we expect that because that's what we see and measure. And that's what's showing up here. As the light shines on the photographic film, or is detected by a photo detector, it will develop bands of intensity based on the number of bosons or photons impacting the detection device. The highest intensity will be in the central part, and it will weaken in both directions from the center, and there will be bands of intensity with gaps in between because it's quantized. And again, whether you're measuring bosons or photons comes down to your direction of measurement. Applying what we've just said to to two EM waves with a superposition, we can see in 3909 that with a superposition, again, just working on the numbers, which does relate back to the geometry, you can cut out your own geometries and put them on top of each other to check what's going on here. But if you look at the intensity or the number of bosons or photons that impact the screen, it starts from the lowest probability or the lowest intensity, a single photon, at the extremities of the two fields, and then increases towards where the fields overlap. Well, it increases towards the medium square root to start with, but then where the fields overlap, they also superposition or add up to increase the intensity. And if you look at those fields and then add up the overlap, you'll see that they create a number pattern that is identical to the interference pattern that's measured and detected. So now we have an explanation, a geometric explanation, for interference patterns and superpositioning, where we get cancellation, or we get an what's the word I'm looking for? Addition, a reinforcement of photon intensities in the wave. And it comes down to, again, in this case, the lateral displacement of the waves where they interact. If they interact so that two positive fields are in the same position, we'll have reinforcement, so the intensity will increase. But if we have a overlapping or a lateral displacement where positive and negatives line up, they will cancel out, so you'll actually have a dip. So you can end up with two interference patterns or a single combined interference pattern, depending on the amount of separation, lateral separation between the fields. Again, a geometric explanation. Looking closely at a single split experiment, you can now look at the distribution in 3910 of quanta within a chem field. That is the stored energy of motion of a particle in motion. You can see that the distribution of bosons in this case, but it could equally be photons, in that chem field forms a normal distribution or a Gaussian curve. And that in this case, in a single slit, in this illustration, the field goes through, but some of it is absorbed by the material of the slit, and only part of the wave gets to go through. So it's a reduced field that comes through, predominantly the central linear momentum components, the 8, 7, and 6s quanta. Ones further out get absorbed, but those quanta, again, upon going through that slit, form an equilateral field of energy momenta, so that concentration, the central band, if you like, of photons or bosons, forms a new EM field on the other side of the slit, which has a reduced energy quanta component. So it's got longer wavelengths. The distribution is still a normal distribution, but the frequency will be less. And again, if you map the distributions of the band that can get through, you'll produce an interference pattern based on the distribution of quanta of either bosons or photons, whether you're measuring the charge or whether you're measuring the intensity of the light photons. But again, it's still a distribution pattern. This distribution pattern, in the case of a single slit, can also have the electron passing through with it as well, which will also interfere with the interference pattern produced, so to contribute to the interference pattern. So when you look at a single slit experiment, you've got to be careful, firstly, whether you're measuring photons or bosons, as we've discussed, but you can see that the geometry of either, in the case of a chem field, and the distribution of bosons or photons can explain the interference pattern produced in single split experiments. Equally, we can apply the same geometry, because it's the same physics, to the double slit experiment. But in this case, as in 3911, the photon will be stopped along with the central band of energy momenta, and only a section of the side bands, if you like, of the quanta will get through. And again, they will form an equilateral field of energy momenta on the other side of the slits, and they will spread out as an inverse squared law until they impact the photodetector. In this case, because we've got two slits, there's two EM waves produced on the other side of the barrier. And as they propagate out and expand, they superposition, as indicated by the numbers on the right-hand side, and overlap. And the distribution of quanta, as shown geometrically, can be turned into numbers, as shown on the right-hand side, to produce, yet again, a straightforward interference pattern. Light and dark lines dependent on the intensity of the EM fields that are created by the photons or bosons that can make it through the slits, and the intensity created where they overlap. And you can see that from the where the barrier is on the right-hand side. On the left-hand side of the black barrier, we have the numerical values of the distribution of bosons for both fields, and where they overlap, they sum up to 4. So we go from 1 to 4 as a central region of similar energy intensities, back down to 1. Again, it's a Gaussian curve. So we have a chem field which has a normal distribution or Gaussian curve interacting with a double slit, producing two equilateral waves that then expand out over time to interact and superposition. And that superpositioning produces a interference pattern that again produces bands of light and dark intensities that forms a curve, the normal distribution. But as noted here, instead of circular lines of Young's depiction, we have equilateral geometries of mass energy. So we can completely replace Young's explanation of white waves as being equilateral mass energies. Whether you detect photons or bosons comes down to your direction of measurement and the type of measurement that you're performing on the fields as they interact with either single or double slits experiments. So we'll probably wrap it up at that, because we've now covered electromagnetic fields. We've covered bosons and photons within them. We've also covered the distributions and how the orientation of the distributions of mass, energy, momenta in those fields creates differing longitudinal or transverse waves, and then how the distribution of bosons and photons within electromagnetic fields or even chem fields can produce interference patterns. So that pretty well covers electromagnetic waves. The next discussion we'll cover is where we accelerate electrons or increase and decrease the quanta within their chem fields when they're bound to nuclei, how that produces spectral lines, and how we can account for all the spectral lines using equilateral geometries.
It's fascinating, because in a way you've already explained that by what you've just described, the whole particle with a field around, with the Young slit and double slit experiment, then comes back as the chem field around the particles. So basically, instead of having it in a flat perspective, you don't see it in a three-dimensional perspective. Of course, the force fields are still surfaces, but I can see why you wanted to have this sequence of the story, and why you needed the first part of the story to actually again make clear that in photons we are not dealing with the particles, because only then can we see how for the atoms we are dealing with something different. So in the way you have built up the stories, with starting with the photons, now the EM fields, and then going into the atomic spectral wave bands, we actually do see the same understanding from different perspectives. And what you keep on showing, and what keeps on being so surprising, so impressive, is how the simplicity of the triangular Planck quantum, persistent in the use in the geometry, just keeps on coming back and coming back and coming back. And yes, it is a retraining of the mind, but in a way, in your telling of the story, it just shows again and again and again why it all comes back to the Planck unit, and the other way around, in the way you discovered it, that when you start with the Planck unit, you can see better how all of this falls in place, which again reaffirms that if people want to understand this, they should not try to start with a theory which they find in the books and see if they can use a dictionary to find the equivalent expression in tetrionics. But it's like a baby being born in one country or being born in the other country. You need to assimilate what happens within that context and integrate it on the basis of your own being. And in this case, you need to be reborn in the land of tetrionics and actually start to play with the templates, with the triangles, form the tetrahedra, see how they connect up. Because only then can you see that it is the logic of the simplicity, and the simplicity of the logic, which then maps back again on everything that has already been described in physics and its mathematics. And as you have already discussed in the telling of the story of the constants of physics, in tetrionics you can actually find again what physics has shown, even if you start from a totally different perspective. And in the telling of the story of the light, you basically go into the shift from thinking in terms of physics and objects to the realization that objects and particles are actually tetrions, which are hollow in the inside and which are inert in their structure, but they are coated with this force field dynamic, these loops chasing up with themselves and forming circuits within circuits, which are actually the force fields which are most visible when you look at them in what you have described now, the electromagnetic fields. So it's really wonderful to hear you tell the story and to see the persistent logic repeat the underlying message again and again. I'm not going to try to summarize what you've said, because it's basically in re-looking at the pictures that people can then see that it was all about understanding how bosons and photons can be used as two different perspectives of the same, but that if you look at photons, you must realize that you're looking at connected bosons, and if you're looking at bosons, then you must realize that you're in a way looking at photons sideways. So in physics there will be a need to in a way combine the measurements of the longitudinal and the transverse, and to think about the connectedness of what Hertz and Tesla have found, and to thereby get rid of this discrepancy which still exists at the model of physics regarding at either the bosons or the photons, and that in physics one of the first steps towards the integration would be in the realization that two bosons make one photon.
It's you see that as a common theme, where whenever we're struggling with understanding in physics, it comes down to a matter of differentiating between the various properties, whether it's geometric differentiation or whether it's a mathematical differentiation. When we have a lack of knowledge, it's usually because we don't have the right understanding of the geometry at work. And you've heard that in the lecture, we differentiate between mass and matter, between topologies and geometries, etc. And the same thing with bosons and photons. There's always a differentiation going on that the mathematics just cannot represent without a very complex structure. And in order to represent the difference between bosons and photons, you have to put in a 90-degree phase change in all your equations. You have to differentiate between longitudinal and transverse masses or energy, and you have to also differentiate between those mass energies as bosons and photons, but also as 90-degree phase changes to each other. And then you add polarization to the equation, and it becomes extremely complex to describe mathematically what the geometry can handle reasonably intuitively.
I think this is an excellent place to then conclude this recording. Because of the quality of the sound, we had to put it in two pieces. Thank you for doing that. So the previous session was about the photons. This session was about the electrons. The next episode will be about essentially the combination of the two, seeing how particles and fields go together. And then in the fourth session, it will be about interference fields, which are the enlargement of that concept of the interactions. Would you like to close it off in your way, as usual, Kelvin?
I think you've nailed it pretty well. I mean, like we started the first discussion just pointing out what photons were in comparison to bosons, what their geometry was. This one we've expanded upon that and shown what the EM fields are with these differing measurements of photons or bosons, depending on how we view the geometry or how we measure the geometry. The next one will be about really highlighting the interaction of these immaterial fields with material particles like photons, electrons, where we can see how we accelerate electrons produces color, spectral lines. All the color of the universe comes from just releasing bosons and photons. And the final one will be where we show some applications to all this discussion that we've had over these three discussions, these three lectures.
Yeah, and I'd just like to add that what you just mentioned, of course, is fundamental because our body evidently works with that. And what we'll end up, our technology can well work with that. So thank you again, Kelvin, for your explanation of now. And as always, I'll end this recording and I'll briefly come back to you to see what next. Thank you.
Yeah.